fyrir liði mitt Jägerbærinn, Jägerbreiðablik Metalíkjur á mér svo ég skín Hver allar að stíga upp til mín Tali bara, gerið eitthvað please Hver allar að stíga upp til mín Ertu inn eða úti? Eruð inn eða úti? Vertu inn eða úti? Ég fer hart bara hart fyrir klúbin Ertu inn eða úti? Ertu inn eða úti? Ertu inn eða úti? Fyrir gera eitt fyrir klúbin
Ég kom í þessalur kæri hlustundur bestald hvenna kláraðast núna á laugardaginn og Breiðablik varð Íslandsmeistari. Dag ég komin með frábæran gest í episode, þjálfara liðsins Nick Chamberlain. Við viljum taka þetta viðtal á ensku sem Nick jú frá Englandi. Welcome Nick, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, doing very good, very happy.
You guys finished as Icelandic champions, just how's the feeling of being a league champion in Iceland?
It's fantastic, you know, I still get, you know, rushes of euphoria and goosebumps when seeing videos or when thinking about it so it's great you know the players really put the effort in and worked hard and fully deserved it
mm-hmm. If we just start with the game on Saturday against Valur just how was the preparation before the game I talked to you before the game and you guys all seemed so calm
Yeah, we were. As I said from the cup final you know even leading to the cup final I think it's quite. We can be quite honest and say we obviously we felt we could win, but there wasn't kind of having that real true belief there. But after the cup final, we say something. Just the mentality just switched, and game by game, we just got more and more confident. Just got better, and going into that week, it was just yeah, just really relaxed, and we were just confident that we were going to get the job done one way or another.
Was it different going into this game than the cup final?
Yeah, a little bit. I think obviously into the cup final we had a game was it maybe on the Sunday before and whereas this one we had a bit of a full week so a little bit in terms of the preparation in terms of that but I think just the whole atmosphere the aura just around the team there's just a belief saying you know no we were just going to get the job done we were confident to go into Valur and getting 3 points and you needed one but we knew we weren't going to lose I don't think we've ever felt as confident going to a game this year.
Mm-hmm. Talk me just through the game day on Saturday. What was it like for you?
Just fine. Slept in a little bit longer than usual because it was a 4:15 kickoff. But then my routine doesn't change.
When are you waking up?
7, 8, 9, something around that. So then I just, you know, for me, nothing really changes, you know, I always go to the gym game day. I've done that through every game so far this year, so that nothing went in. So the men were training, so I was just around there, just doing my usual things, just getting bits and pieces ready, getting all the equipment together that me and Saivar take, and then we made our way to Hilandia, and yeah, but it was just all calm, relaxed, yeah, just a really enjoyable day from the start.
When the game started there was a lot of fans in the stand nice to see that
no it was fantastic I think you know I'm glad that we managed to at least you know break the record and it's a good statement going forward for women's football in Iceland you know knowing that it can be done it's just now the question of making sure you know we're not going to get 1600 at every game we're not you know I'm not going to sit here standing and wish that but you know we can see that we should be able to at least bump up the attendances at least what I'm hoping for at Breiðablik next year to at least get around 200-300 on a regular basis mm-hmm. so it was a good advert for that but it was fantastic from both sides from Valur and Breiðablik to come together and make it a real big event and again all the spectators that turned up we've got to thank them as well
mm-hmm. and the match itself how were you feeling like throughout the match did you feel like you guys had control
I think both teams had their moments in the game. Obviously, we knew Valur was going to have a little bit more possession the way we set up with the press. But, you know, I think, as Elisa said before the game, we know one another. I think this was the sixth time we've played one another this year. So nothing is too much to change of what's going on. So it was a case of just making, you know, taking the moments when they came either way to each team. But it was good. It was a good physical game as well on... Yeah, you know, it wasn't anything dirty. It was just a real solid, proper football game, and it was an entertaining 0-0 for me.
Yeah, it was kind of like a fun 0-0 draw. It was a nice game.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's, you know, started off. You know, both teams had chances from set pieces, and it settled down a little bit. And then something, you know, both teams opened a little bit more. And then the second half, obviously Valo had to go for it, and then it started to get a little bit open. Both teams again had some more chances, and then obviously in the last 10 minutes when they're just going for it, we're, you know, throwing bodies on the line, Telemans coming out, and Alston and Ellen getting things, first contact and crosses, they were just all excellent. And yeah, so I mean it was a great ending. Mm-hmm.
Just like the final 10-15 minutes of the game, Valur threw everybody up the pitch, and Natasha was playing as a striker. Just how proud were you of your team of, like, withstanding that pressure?
Extremely, because it's, you know, going to two rivals' ground with that intense pressure and seeing it out, they deserve a lot of credit. Especially, you know, as got mentioned, that the last few years they've been finishing second. Mm-hmm. So that's always potentially in the back of the mind, but they just managed to see it out. There wasn't any nervousness. Like, even when, you know, Telma was, you know, had a little slice kick past two defenders, I wasn't ever worried. And you could see that she didn't panic. It wasn't a great kick, but she knew what she was still doing. So that was the biggest thing, you know, through the whole of those 10 minutes when they were throwing bodies forward and putting more and more crosses in, that the players were just kept calm and kept doing the jobs, and managed to see it out. So yeah, as I say, they deserve all the credit for that period of time, because that's when the automatic, you know, you can't coach anything like that. That's just the players themselves at that point.
Mm-hmm. One of the biggest moments of the season happened right before the final whistle, when Fantis had that opportunity on the far post. What was your nerves on that, when that moment happened?
Yeah, it's just like everything was in slow motion. You know, the ball comes, you know, works it out wide, and Anna Raquel just hangs it in there, and you just see Fandy's coming in. It didn't look as close as it was from where we were, but when I saw it back, it's like, yeah, that could have been a static moment either way. But yeah, it was nervousness. You're kind of on your toes, you tense up a little bit. But that was pretty much the only moment.
Mm-hmm. Like, I was thinking it in those final minutes, just, what would happen if Valur would have scored? Like, what would your guys' reaction would have been? Were you thinking on the lines of that?
A little, you know, because we were sitting there thinking about substitutions, because, you know, a couple of players were getting tired. But once it kind of got into the 90 plus, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know what you could have done. Mm-hmm. If Valur had scored, obviously if Andy scored, that was it. It was over. We weren't going to ever get a chance. I mean, we were one long ball forward, but, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know what you can do with that. There was a little bits there, but it's a case of then just, you know, just making sure that we just see it out.
Mm-hmm. I saw on Instagram when the final whistle happened that you described it as the greatest feeling in the world.
Yeah, I mean, say at the time it was, and then seeing the video again, I think for me it is the greatest moment of my life, mm-hmm. just because of. You know, it's a national title in a country, regardless of where it is. You know, I mean, I've never won a national title. I've won titles both as a player here in Iceland, and, you know, a little bit in America, but nothing on the grand scheme of being, you know, the national title. Mm-hmm. So for me, in terms of a sporting achievement, personally, that was probably the greatest feeling of my life. Mm-hmm.
Do you think about all the work that has led up to this moment?
A little bit, but I mean, it's for me, it's just what I do anyway. The work that goes in, you know, for me, it's more a case of the players changing their training routines, the time that they put in, you know, dealing with the video analysis meetings that we have, the extra work. So, I mean, for me, that's where it's all paid off, is the players that have kind of taken on board what we as a coaching staff have wanted to implement, and then just, you know, applying it. You know, we give them the tools, and they made the title with it themselves. So, I wouldn't say it's necessary for me putting the hard work in. I would say it's definitely on them.
Nice to see the joys on their faces after the final whistle blew.
Yeah, I mean, it's ecstatic. You know, seeing how happy they are, and go and put the work they put in, you know, going, bearing in mind, is to say we finished second the last few years, and obviously going in, that was the target, was to win. You know, I wasn't sure if we, you know, if it was going to be this year, but I knew we'd be close, it would be a case of closing the gap. But as I say, once the season kind of got started, and you kind of seeing, okay, we can definitely push them all the whole way. And as I say, then the introduction of the summer signings and getting Aglamere back just kind of gave a new freshness and a new yeah, just a freshness to the group, and it just the aura just lifted into a positive, much more positive way from what it was before. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't negative before; it was still good. It just kind of gave everybody a nice little, yeah, freshness to it.
Nice celebration after the match on Saturday.
Yeah, as you would expect. I didn't go into too many. I mean, it wasn't anything that you wouldn't expect. It was fun. It was enjoyable. Once we could finally settle down, because it was a bit of a rush afterwards to get things done, you know, especially for me and Elsa to get from Hirlandia to Stuttgart and then get over across. But once we could just relax with everybody and enjoy the night, it was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm.
Just the season overall, it was the first season in Breiðablik. I watched the team a lot, but I sensed that you kind of got a rhythm early to your new job. You kind of found the right mixture.
Yeah, there was always a good balancing. I mean, I knew going in the areas that we need to focus on in terms of players that we needed to recruit to support me wanting to continue the Diamond. Mm-hmm. Had conversations with players as well in terms of changing their style a little bit of how to fit, and everybody was open to it, which is the main thing as well. Mm-hmm. Had, you know, some of them said, no, I don't know if we can do this. You know, it might have been a little bit difficult, but they were open to at least trying. Mm-hmm. And that was the biggest thing. And yeah, and so we just, you know, started off well. I think that was the biggest thing. I think in the first three or four games, 3-0. Granted, they might have helped that they were all at home at that point, but you know, you just take what's in front of you and how the fixtures go, and you have to win every game regardless of who you're playing. But yeah, we kind of got into a good rhythm to put us in a good position. Obviously then in June, July, when we lost Agla Maria, obviously we're still winning games, but it, you know, obviously wasn't as convincing. Mm. But the good thing is that we were still defending extremely well. You know, say that the back four, back five, back six, if you can include Heather as well, were excellent, considering it was the first time that they've ever played together. You know, they were dealing with things very, very well. And yeah, so I mean, it goes to the old, you know, cliche, you know, strikers win games, but you know, when it comes down to it, you know, you've got to keep the ball out of the net to win the title majority of the time.
You mentioned before, after the cup final, you got Kristen Dees, you got Agla Maria back, and you got Samantha Smith added to the squad. How much did that change for you guys?
Did a lot. I mean, say Kristen Dees, you know, she comes in and offers, you know, she's a winner. I think we were talking about it a little bit yesterday. I think, you know, after Margaret Laura, she's got the highest winning percentage of games in Iceland, mm-hmm. at least on the women's side. So she's a winner. So that character adds to the game. Obviously, Agla Maria's quality speaks for herself, and you know, the way Sammy came in was great, but it was just a nice little balance. It wasn't as though we were just relying on one person. You know, Catherine up front was a good vocal point. The defence were always solid. They started popping up with a couple of assists. And Drea as well, finishing, you know, the season, you know, six games in a row, scoring goals and getting a few assists here. She went under the radar a little bit. Everybody's focusing on Sammy and Agla Maria, but Drea was, you know, she was ticking over and getting important goals and assists at the time. Maybe it's because she had a competition with her brother. I could put them in the competition at the start of the season, saying whoever scores the most amount of goals gets dinner with one another. So unless Aaron scores, you know, seven goals in the next two games, which isn't going to happen, and then she's won that bet.
Just like, yeah, at the point after the cup final, you guys were averaging four goals or something a game. Must have been fun to managing the team at that point.
It was. You just knew we were going to create chances. So, I mean, we just had to make sure that we were still defensively sound. You know, we still had to do some work on that as a whole unit from top to bottom. But you knew the confidence was there. So it was just a case of just fine-tuning and allowing players to do what they do best. As I say, you know, I think the last, you know, apart from Valor, the last seven games, from Valor to Valor, actually, the minimum goals we scored was four, which is mental. But yeah, so it was a lot of fun knowing that we were always going to create chances, but you've always got to make sure that you're defensively sound from, as I say, from front to back, and they made sure that they keep doing the job and they're always disciplined.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Sami. She came from FOL in the Lengjudeildin. Do you have an explanation of why she was playing in Lengjudeildin?
I'm assuming that, you know, because you know, agents, you know, they offer players throughout the winter. Obviously, we weren't looking for an attacking player in the winter. We didn't need one. I knew one. We probably needed the second half of the season. But, it, you know, my guess would have been a case that Callie needed an attacking player. her agent sent, and he was just like, yes. So I mean, that's basically how, you know, I'm assuming how it was. Obviously he would have done his research and make sure that she was, you know, a suitable player for everything. But yeah, I mean, I've got no idea if she was offered to anybody in the best of deal. It's not a conversation I've had.
She was not offered to you before the season?
No, we weren't looking. I mean, I wasn't looking. The only player that we needed was a left back at the time, and which we had with Anna at that point. But, you know, from, I think some people, you know, we didn't sign anybody in 2024 until we got Christine Dees. So, like, we got players done before Christmas because there were some, we just had to get things done before Christmas, basically, for reasons. So, you know, we signed nobody from January onwards because we didn't have the resources to do so. So it wasn't as though we were offered and said no, you know, for any player. You know, it was just a case of I can't bring anybody in. And we, as I said, we weren't looking for an attacking player at the time. So there's no point in me looking, you know, getting sent someone that I'm just not going to be interested in signing, needing to sign at the time.
Yeah, and then you watch Sami playing in Lengjudeildin with FOL. Did you always know that she is going to take the step up to best of and be the best player in that league?
She had, she's got great qualities. That definitely suit styles of play. But you know, seeing some, you know, seeing what's going on, and obviously hearing some reports of players that have come up against her, you know, the coaches said that, you know, for them she was always, you know, and I agree, she was more of a complete player to Emma Hawkins. Obviously the different styles, but you know, that's what we wanted, someone that could do a little bit more of an attacking midfield role rather than just an out and out striker. And Sami could do that. You know, she could create and score herself.
Did you know at that point if there were any other clubs in Iceland trying to sign her?
No idea. I heard one or two said that they looked into it, but I think, you know, both for Callie and for her, it, because of the situation we're in, I think if Valor were in the same situation, I think they might have, you know, looked if they needed a player, I don't know. But I think realistically it would only been for something that she was going to fight for, you know, because she was enjoying life in the East. They had won the league, comfortable to see it out there. There's no point just going to, you know, the top league to, you know, just play there. But I think the benefit of us having the Champions League, having the cup final and fighting for the league, I think she saw it as a chance to become a double winner, which she's done. And I don't know if I don't think that's ever happened in at least in women's football, as far to my knowledge, before.
And she's also in the team of the season for both leagues. It's kind of insane, really.
Exactly. I mean, I think she finished she got 9 goals. So was that third or fourth top goal scorer for us as well, and
plenty of assists as well.
Plenty of assists as well. So yeah, I mean, it's you know, with her impact was magnificent, to be honest. And you know, also she's a great person. You know, she comes in the dressing room, she's happy, you know, and she lifts the girls up. She's a, you know, really, really good girl.
Did your like relationship with, you know, FOL and Kali also help in signing her?
Probably. You know, me and Kali go back a few years. We've gone to America a few times to look at players, and so yes, I mean, I think that definitely helped. As I say, he was in for Seamamolt. He was down south for Seamamolt. We were working on a project together for the UEFA Pro, and so I just asked him then. So I think it definitely helped, you know. And as I said on Stuart Tour the other day, when you're in a situation like them were like similar to when I was at Throttle first coming up, you always look to bring players that you know are too, you've got to try and bring players that are too good for you. One, so it can help the team, and two, you know, likelihood that they're going to move on. Then it's a good selling point for your next recruitment. Hey, we did this to this player, she went to here, this is what we can do for you. And so I think, you know, it was a win-win for everybody. I know he would have loved to try and bring her back, so, but you know, I appreciate Callie a lot for allowing us to get it done.
As I said, I like hoping to sign her for next season as well.
That's what we want to do. And we've still got conversations ongoing. I know there's interest from elsewhere outside of Iceland. So it's a case of, you know, now the season's done, for her to to have a proper think about it, because as I say, you know, during the towards the end of the season, things can be a little bit overwhelming, mm-hmm. and completely we just wanted to focus on winning the league. So these conversations are going on, and we'll see. We're very hopeful, but again, you know, if she moves on, then all the best to her. But you know, fingers crossed that we can keep her here.
Mm-hmm. Like her connection with Agla Maria and Andrea and Katrin and all these players, it just, she kind of fitted in like seamlessly. Like that impact that she had, you talked about that you've never seen that before from a player, especially from a player coming in from the middle of the season.
Yeah, I think the confidence, you know, with her carrying on from what she was doing in the East, mm-hmm. you know, so she's fit, she was scoring goals, she's assisting, so her confidence is high. And then I think the first training session, you could just see the quality there. And so the players, they're already open. You know, thinking, you know, players are players. You know, if they see someone's good, they're just like, okay, this is a player, we can work with her. But, you know, what happens on the pitch, I think sometimes you just have the chemistry. You know, it's not as though we could do anything in a short period of time that she was with us. It's always like, hey, we've got to work on this pattern, this pattern, this pattern. Mm-hmm. Good players can just feed off one another. Mm-hmm. They know, just have a like an innate feeling that at that level, good players can just work off one another. I think that was more so what it was, that the players just kind of clicked. It wasn't anything that we did in terms of, you've got to do this, do this, mm-hmm. give ideas, but ultimately it's just what they just did on the pitch.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about, you know, other players in your team, the centre-back partnership, Elin and Asta. Asta was one of the best right backs in Iceland before the season. Then you turned her into a centre back.
Yeah. So I mean, coming in to Breivik, you know, looking at the squad that they had and what players were potentially leaving, and what I felt wasn't going to be suitable for us, it was a position I sat down and said, look, you're not going to be able to play as a fullback in the diamond, because it's just a little bit too much on your body. Because she had, you know, a couple of injuries a few years, and you know, the physios said, you know, she's still got, you know, bits and pieces. But I've seen qualities there. I was just like, we can make you a centre back. Mm. You know, you and Ellen could be a really, really good partnership together. And again, she was open to it. We just talked about it, and she said, as long as we can coach it, then she was open to it. And I said, there was, you know, and that's all it was, basically. It still takes time, of course, to really, really get comfortable at it. But she was always confident, and you know, performances and the relationships that she had with Elim was great. And as I say, you know, with that, those two, it was a defensive unit and the fullbacks, and obviously, you know, Talmud's best defensive record in the league, mm-hmm. Which I don't think anybody from the outside realised. Obviously, I think they saw the pre-season spell, mm-hmm. and when people were saying the centre backs were going to be the weakest link, mm-hmm. I think they kind of took that going, you know, it's a case to maybe try and prove people wrong, mm-hmm. in some ways, maybe. But no, they were excellent, and she was, you know, a great leader on the pitch, in the dressing room, through the club in general, and she's gonna be sorely missed.
Yeah, Asta, she announced a couple of days ago that she's gonna retire from football. It's a bit sad that she's retiring.
She is. It is rather. As I said, she's been fantastic. Really open, good character. You know, comes and has a word if there's any sort of potential issues, but just a great person, a great role model to everyone at the club. So she felt the time was right, and just glad that we could finish on the high for her. We knew, the players and the staff knew for a couple of weeks, mm. it was going to happen. But again, what tells you about her character is that she wanted none of the spotlight on her to take away from winning the league. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was... It was a great send off that the club gave her to her, like Arne Lufdal.
The video
was amazing.
Amazing video.
Yeah, and he deserves a lot, some credit as well in terms of just the social media, but that video was perfect. I mean, I only understood bits and pieces of it, but I was emotional watching it as well.
Yeah, like I was watching it, and it kind of pulls on your like heartstrings.
Yeah, the video. Definitely.
Aslaf is of course a legend of the club. She's played almost her whole career, I think, at Breiðablik. Like, is she one of the best maybe characters you worked with in football?
I would say so. I mean, it's difficult to kind of, I mean, there's no doubt about it, but when I was at Throttle, we always had a pretty much a young team. Mm-hmm. So some of them, you know, they haven't really kind of grown into, you know, adults pretty much yet, because that's how we were. So usually more often than not, the older players were foreigners or just players that have come in and helped. But with her experience being at Breiðablik, at a club like Breiðablik, where she's just used to winning, I would say so. She's just a really, really great character, and I'd probably say one of the best I've managed to work with in a short period of time.
Mm-hmm. And you know, Elin and Thelma, they're playing alongside her, the young players. You know, Elin, she's been on loan with Keflavík a couple of years ago, and now she's just a key player in your team. Do you think she helped those girls around her?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. I think Elin would agree to that. The same coming in, Elin really stood up. You know, you kind of saw the competition, because obviously we brought Jakobina in, and as you know, pardon me, for extra competition. And I give all the credit to Elin just for seeing that, and just she's just raised the game massively, and she's been really, really impressive this year. Still, we can still work on a lot of things, and she knows that, and we've talked about it. But in terms of what she's been able to do this year, I think it's been a massive, massive step forward for her. So I think obviously Alistair helps that as well. I think Christine helped as well towards the end of the season, and Thelma has experience. I mean, I think they all fed off one another a little bit, because even though Alistair is experienced in the character, she's never played centre back before. So obviously, you know, I'm sure Elin helped her out as well.
Mm-hmm. Elin, she's only 22 years old. Do you think she can go far in the game as a centre back?
I think so. She's got all the attributes. I mean, she's tall, she's decent in the air, she's quick, she's got really good at the being in possession of the ball this year. There was one game, I think it was against Thorkawa. She had 62 passes and 62 passes completed, according to Y Scout.
Yeah.
I don't think I've coached a player that's had 100% pass completion in the game. So she's got all the capabilities. We've talked about some things that we've got to work on. As she said, she's young.
She's like one of those players as well in your team that went under the radar this season.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, got a couple of messages after the game against Valor saying that they thought she was the best player on, you know, for us. She's 22. Kind of settled, because obviously you said she went on a couple of loans, and which sometimes happens, it's going to take some time, but you know, touch wood, you know, she'll be at the heart of the defence for Breiðablik for a long time to come, and you know, who knows where a few extra years might take. She might even be able to break into the professional game. Mm-hmm. Potentially.
Mm-hmm. Possibly the signing of the season as well, Heiða Ragne in midfield, another player, very underrated player these last few seasons in the top league. Signing of the season, maybe.
I mean, I wouldn't go against it. Certainly, in terms of, again, coming to the, you know, the inexperience with Alistair and Elin. I think Heiða had the, again, you know, gone to the stats on Y Scout, she had the most amount of interceptions in the league. Mm-hmm. Usually, that kind of falls down defenders, but it shows how much she was kind of protecting. So I think that eased the burden as well. But yeah, someone that's come in and really took to that defensive midfield role as a six really, really well. Extremely happy. I mean, as I said on Stuttgart the other day, it was I knew I was never going to get Alva. That was never going to happen, and you know, people would know that I'm quite open about it. But as soon as I knew Heiða was out of contract anyway, as everybody does, you know who's out of contract and you kind of have some ideas. I mean, that's how they say that Throttle, she wouldn't have come in because it wasn't the player we needed. But as soon as I came in Breiðablik, it was a number one, one of the number one targets for me to fill in that position.
Yeah. Mentioned Alva, you know, she knows that role from you mentioning Throttle. Did you try to sign her?
No. I wasn't even going to go down that road of causing yeah, it just wasn't worth the hassle because it was never going to happen. Thorsten would have never allowed it in terms of a price tag, I'm sure.
No, Heather was available, so as you said, she was the number one option to fill that role, and it's quite a big role in your system, isn't it?
It is. I mean, and this is what, you know, for me as a number six, what we needed for in the diamond isn't necessarily someone that's, you know, great in possession and can be a deep line playmaker. It's a ball winner. You know, just to be someone that can break up play and obviously just play the easy passes. I mean, hey, there's a very, very good footballer, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't the main attribute which I was looking for. It was someone that can just be a ball winner, sit in front, protect, break attacks, understand that she's got to cover a lot of ground, which, you know, she didn't realise how much, but, you know, she grew into it. But that was the main thing, attribute for me that we were looking for. And, you know, she was one of the best at it.
And I mean, all of your signings kind of worked before the season. Barbara came from, you know, relegated Selfoss, and she played amazing in the right back position where you have to go like a lot up and down the pitch.
Yeah. She's always someone that I've tried the last couple of years when contract was coming up at, you know, Selfoss, or seeing what was going to be an option. She was always there for me because I've always enjoyed her since. I think it's 2020. I think when was Dagny and Iceland? I think it was 2020.
Yeah.
And she came in for Selfoss, and you just saw the power. Mm-hmm. So I knew she always had, you know, that sort of attributes, like to be able to get up and down. And that was the same thing when I sat down with Tolder last year, because I know other teams were interested in her, but they were just like, we're going to play with left back. Mm-hmm. I was just like, she knows. She doesn't have the greatest left foot in the world. I said, you're right back, and that's your only thing position you're going to do for me. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she's excellent. Again, you know, you've got to give credit to like the staff off the field of Saivar and the physios, because she's had niggly injuries, and they looked after her and made sure that, especially early on in the season, in the winter, that we didn't overplay her. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a slight worry when she had a slight hamstring tear at Thorkauer in the Lyngebjergene semi-final.
Yeah.
And then obviously the start of the season, she wasn't always playing 90 minutes. We had to, I think we rested her one game, but she would always maybe 45, 60, and we had to build her up. So, I mean, I've got to give a lot of credit to, say, Siren, Augusta, Bjarki, Hulver, everybody that was looking after her off the field, letting us know that she can only play this amount of time, this intensity.
You know, that, as I mentioned before, the defensive game was brilliant. You guys conceded the fewest goals in the league, but you also scored the most. All the options you had in attack as well, was it at some point kind of like overwhelming, because you got Katrin, you got Vigdís, you got Birta, you got Andrea, you got Agla Maria, you got, you know, Samantha coming in. There's a lot of options.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. And even at the start of the season, when everybody was finally getting, you know, was fit, especially when Katrin was fully fit after her injury, that was always the question that, you know, people asked me in the winter, just like, how are you going to deal? You know, you can't do this, you can't, you know, what's going to... It's just, I just had conversations with them, that's what it was, and they understood what was expected of them. They knew certain games would be for them, other games wouldn't be, but that was the main thing, is I just told them and just didn't bullshit them, basically. Mm-hmm. It's just like, this is what's going to happen, this is how it's going to work, this is your role, this is what you do well at, this is what other people do well at, and, you know, they were, as I said, you know, they worked. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I mean, it was great to be able to play different options, so depending on the opposition, depending on, you know, if we went to grass, obviously we changed formation a couple of times, and with these players that can, with the exception of Katrin, she can't play as a winger, but the others can play around a little bit. Yeah. So it just always gave us kind of different options, and if someone come on off the bench as an impact player, you know, it's going to be something a little bit different as well. Mm-hmm. which is important for me to have a well-balanced team, but also having different weapons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as I said, Katrin is a number nine, but all the other players, they have versatility to play on the wings and maybe like behind the striker.
Yeah. And they kind of all did that little role a little bit. So very happy with the versatility that they have, and the way the players grew into their roles.
Mm-hmm. Before the season, of course, your first season at Breiðablik, you take over the team, the decision to go from Þróttur. Difficult decision to leave after so many years.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I mean, there was definitely tears on my part, you know, because I was, you know, that group of players that I had been working with for 7.5 years mean a lot to me. Still do now. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to see them do well. But yeah, I mean, it was very difficult. It wasn't something that I took lightly. It was a conversation that I had with my parents when I went home, because the few days before I delayed my flight, you know, because I was just all over the place mentally. I was speaking to all different types of people to get their advice. But so then when I went home, the conversation was quite easy, because, you know, my parents aren't here in Iceland. They don't follow the football deep internet or anything like that. They just go off what I tell them when we have sparse conversations every couple of weeks or something like that. I'm not someone that's always on the phone to my parents. And so they only go for what I tell them. Mm-hmm. And there was certainly a happiness part in it. It wasn't the case of the players themselves. There was a lot more going on, which was affecting me. Mm-hmm. You know, even like mental health wise. Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't actually mentioned this, but this is since 2018. This past year is the first time I haven't seen it. I haven't seen a psychiatrist. Mm. I was going through a lot of stuff off the field, some of it related to football, some of it personal. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot more to me leaving than just for, obviously, football reasons was one of them, but there was a little bit more to it. And they said the conversation with my parents was quite easy. And then once that happened, I knew it was the decision that I needed to make. And yeah, but it was very tough.
How was it just to come up against Throttur this season and all the players you've managed?
Well, we did it in pre-season, mm-hmm. The last game before the start of the East Landsmót, and I think that was, we went to their place, and I think they say it was always a little bit kind of weird. I don't know. It's hard to describe, because there's a lot of strong feelings there. The way it kind of ended wasn't great either from certain people. Mm. But it was nice to see them, you know, and throughout the course of the games as well. By the time we come to the last game, it is what it is. You've come up against them 3 or 4 times now, you know, so it's you just move on. It's football, it happens. You know, I did it as a player, moved from Huyen to Fjallabith, you know, so a rivalry in the east, you know, and got called Judas, but that was more kind of out of jest, because, you know, but so it's those things kind of happen in football, but this happens as a coach. And as I say, it was a weird feeling playing against them, but ultimately I was at Breidablik to win games, and that's the job.
Mm. Was it not the best maybe ending with Rotter?
Yeah, I'm not going to get, you know, it's not, I don't want to air dirty laundry, but it wasn't how I envisioned it. As I say, there was a lot more going on to behind the scenes rather than just what was going on that made helped make the decision. Mm. And it wasn't as I was looking to leave by any means. I never, you know, mentioned that. I mean, I was happy to stay, but it wasn't until something else came up, mm-hmm. that the thought process happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, partly I was expecting, it would have been nice to have been offered an extension, mm-hmm. during the, you know, the final few weeks, because this year would have been my last. Mm. And the previous two contracts I had to sign at Throttur, it was always it was always coming to the end a little bit, and I always had to initiate, and I was just like, mm-hmm. I'd like to think I've done a good job. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I mean, I never, you know, there were some issues with people saying, oh, you know, he said he was going to stay, did this. I never said that. I said at this moment in time, mm-hmm. I was hoping it'd give him a kick up the backside,
yeah.
to go, okay, you know, obviously Breidablik was free at the time, the last 4 or 5 weeks of the season. Everybody knew that the job was open. Nobody had been in contact. Obviously people want to work at the highest level, but it wasn't as I was actively searching for it by any means, because we were finishing strong. We had the outside chance of Champions League. We'd signed Ellen Meta. Mm-hmm. You know, she was going to look to continue. So there was things in place that we were to go forward, but it's just nothing, you know, nothing came. And then, you say, had a conversation with Breidablik, and then offer came, but at that point, you know, it was a little bit too late.
Ole Christians came in and took charge of Throttle. Did you think he did a good job with the team?
Yeah, I mean, they went through, you know, obviously some changes. They lost some players and they had to recruit some players in. So as it goes through, you know, they were solid. They were a very difficult team to play against. And, you know, you always go through, you know, some transitions period. And, you know, I'm sure eventually, you know, they've got everything in place at Throttle. You know, they've got the new pitch on the main field, which I think makes a difference, because it is a very, very difficult place to go to. Even when I was there, when we were there, it was difficult. When over the back, it wasn't really the same, but it is one of those, you know, went through that period of time. You know, they've got great youngsters coming through in the 2008s that are there. They've got a couple of 2007s as well that are great. So they've got a great future there. So I'm sure there will be, you know, a lot of success to come, which, you know, I hope they do. I'm just, yeah, so I mean, sure, you know, that they will have success.
Mm-hmm. And when the Breiðablik job came up, probably not the decision you regret now, taking the job as your Icelandic champions now.
No, exactly. I mean, I've always, I was never, you know, actively searching for it at the time. It wasn't until someone reached out, because as I say, I mean, I had a contract and I wanted to win something at Throttle, mm-hmm. Or at least achieve even more than what we did. But as I say, there was just, once it came up, it was just kind of looking towards, you know, your life a little bit in terms of what you want to do. And again, you know, going something personal, I lost a couple of friends in the last couple of years, and, you know, we're around my age. Mm-hmm. And, you know, had I been in my 50s, I would have stayed at Throttle, because, you know, very happy there. So it's a great club and very family orientated, and it's just good to go through. But I'm in my 30s, so I've still got things that I want to achieve, and I felt, for me, that the Breiðablik was the right next step to be able to do so. And as I say, you know, we won the league, and we're looking to do it next year. But, you know, I've always had a decent gut feeling when making moves as a player and as a coach, even if it meant sometimes leaving friends or close people behind to a new challenge. And it usually always works out.
And of course, it's sometimes important in life to change your environment, try something new.
No, exactly. Exactly, it's important for that. I say my goal is to try and get into, you know, professional game in Europe, and I felt this was the step. And, you know, it has felt natural. I mean, there's still, it's not as though, you know, Breiðablik is perfect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we still have issues, you know, off the field that we've got to sort out, and things that we've got to iron out, and hopefully we can work through them. So I mean, I'm not saying it's you know, amazing and everything's perfect by any means. It has its issues as everywhere else. But I think, you know, for me, as I said, you know, my, you know, mental health, what it's going through, it's the change in environment sometimes is good. Mm-hmm. And as I say, being at Breiðablik, it's just felt like a natural move. It hasn't felt, I don't know if difficult is the right word. It's just felt natural from the first meeting that I had with the players. Mm-hmm. We just knew what the goal was, and I think that everybody was on the same track straight away.
It was the right move.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've been in Iceland a long time now. First came, what, 2007, to play for Álftanes. I was going to ask you before the podcast, and then I would just ask you in the podcast, just how did that happen? Why did you sign for Álftanes in 2007?
So I was playing Auburn University in Montgomery. Mm. Bunch of, you know, tons of Icelandics that was out there. You know, some big names. Hjörtur Julius is probably the biggest. Steinthor was there a little bit later. Kauri, Afsalesen as well. So, you know, there were all these sorts of players that were there. And it was March, April. Didn't have anything after my freshman year in America. And then Magnus Olofsson said, I've got my friend Binny Gesson. He's coaching at Álftanes. Do you want to go and play? I was like, yeah. That was it. So that was it. It's played 2007-2008, which was an interesting year with Íhá. I didn't know what Íhá was as a club at that point. But it's what it is. 9 was off, 10 Huyin. And
you came to the east,
yeah,
a bit different, isn't it?
Yeah, and being a guest, you know, something similar. It was just like, hey, because he coached there previously, and I think Binny Skúla was looking for players, and Binny Guest put me forward, and I went to Sejfrida and fell in love. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's my second home away from Eastbourne, even though I don't get there back so much now. But whenever I go back, it's fantastic. And playing for Huyen was, you know, probably some of the best times of best times as well. You know, spending summers in Sailors Rula, the town and just everything about it, it was amazing.
How is it just to go from, you know, England and to a small town in Iceland and just to adjust to it?
I mean, Eastbourne's not, I mean, it's 100,000 people, but it's not a big town. It's not, it's kind of small. Everybody knows one another. Montgomery, even though it was big, your community was in Alabama, it's just pretty much a university. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've always been easy to adapt. So even though it's only, you know, 700 people, whatever it was, it was fine. You know, the great people there, got some great friends. So it wasn't ever a worry of nothing ever to do. Or anything like this. It was just, yeah, it was easy. It's just like I can adapt, and it was a great place to live in the summers. I don't know if I could live there all winter, but no, it was easy to adapt, and the people there made it so.
Mm-hmm. Had you ever been to Iceland before you came to play for Álftanes?
Nope.
So you didn't know what to expect?
I knew it was a volcanic place in terms of the scenery.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I didn't really know what to expect really. So I still remember the first, you know, Kat and Adli. Mm-hmm. He picked me up from the airport because he was playing for Alftoness at the time, drove me around a little bit. But yeah, so no expectations of it. It was just to come and just play football. That's what it was. That was my only, well, obviously I was working bits and pieces of the town, but it was just coming here to play football. Mm-hmm. And then over the years, once I finished my masters, it was the choices of staying in Alabama, mm-hmm. Going back to England, or trying to come to Iceland. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to stop playing at that time, so I tried to look to come back to Iceland, and that was that in 2016 when I went to play for After Reading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the second division, you scored 8 goals in 9 matches for After Reading.
I was on fire. Yeah. I mean, I was taking penalties as well, because I won a penalty competition when we were in Spain.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I was, to be honest, I was playing probably the best football of my life. I was fit. I was just really playing well. I mean, I say I scored 8 goals in 9 games. I mean, the ninth one, it was 20 minutes appearance against Vestry. I mean, but during that time, there was already moments where I wasn't necessarily enjoying the football as much. Mm-hmm. There were certain aspects to what was going on as well. And yeah, and so then I got Benny Guest at the time, you know, who I owe a lot to, both as a friend, and, you know, getting me some places in Iceland, both to the east, and then got me in at Throttle because he was Greg's assistant at the time. Mm-hmm. And he got me help coaching the 3 o'clock at Kvenna. Mm-hmm. That's when I started coaching Alva and Soli. Mm-hmm. in that age. Mm-hmm. And he was just like, you can do, you know, just come in, do the job, because Mr. Runas was finishing, she was coaching there, she was just moving on. And he was just like, if you just give it a few weeks, then they'll move on the coach at the time from the men's team, from the women's team, and you can take over. So that was exciting for me, and the plan was to do both. Mm-hmm. Both play for After Living and then coach Throttu. I was going to make it work. I could make it work. I had an injury at the time, so I mean, it made it the transition to begin with, but this was ultimately my job, and I was given an ultimatum by the chairman that After Living at the time was to either you turn up to a game at which I was injured for, or you can say goodbye. I think he was trying to call my bluff, and I was just like, I'm 29, I'm playing in the second division. I mean, you know, I could have stayed, and, you know, we probably would have got promoted, and like would have probably finished as top goal scorer. But I was just like, it's time to just move on to a career now of coaching, and being offered to coach full time was that, and so that was that.
When did you know that you wanted to coach? Because you started in 2014 coaching Fjallabyggð. Mm-hmm. When did you just get the idea that you wanted to coach?
I mean, I was coaching when I was 14, 15, just like a private academy back home on a Saturday morning. I usually did four to six-year-olds, and that's what I did for years, because I've also got a teaching degree, but I was always coaching the youngest ones because it's fun, and I guess the best word is to have the patience for it, and I can... yeah, just kind of just enjoy it as much. So I've always been coaching. So I think coaching was always there to be able to part. I don't know if it would have been a full time, you know, never looked at it as being full time because I didn't know the progression. And obviously, the women's game, I wasn't coaching women until I was doing high school in America. Mm-hmm. So it was I was coaching boys and girls, being an assistant. And you know, basically what made the difference was they asked me to choose one or the other. The boys lost. We only won one game that season where the girls made the playoffs. Mm. I wanted to be successful, so I chose to coach the women, and that was it. So that's what really got me into coaching women. It wasn't a case of only opportunities and stuff like this. It's just a case that they were just more successful with the high school, and then that's pretty much it. Mm-hmm. And then going to Fjallabith again, Binny Guest. He was coaching the men's team. So I was doing my masters. He was just like, you can come across and play for me and you can coach the women. So that's what we got coaching women here in Iceland. I did actually coach some of the Fimtflokkakvenna at Alftanes as well. Mm-hmm. So I've always been in and around coaching women, but yeah, that was the main reason. So playing for Binny Guest and coaching the women.
Mm-hmm. 2017, you coached Þróttur in the first deild, and you also played for Huginn.
Mm-hmm.
How did that work?
Oh Jesus! it was tough. We were managed to, obviously, you know, Þróttur took priority, but I was also living in Keflavik at the time as well. but you know, I was all and coaching, you know, Anna Flocka, Three Flocka, and Three Flocka Kvenna in 2017. Mm. So I mean, I was doing Jesus. That and playing for Huginn. So it was tough, you know, but we made it work. I think we were decent to begin with as well. I think if I remember rightly with Huginn, and then it kind of fell away a little bit. But yeah, it was basically, you know, when I could go, picked up yellow cards if I knew things were going to clash. and if there was some recovery days, you know, I think Raquel Loa that I had at the time assisting would take the games. I would just work things around. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was, it's not something I would recommend.
Just, you know, all the years with Þróttur and the progression you guys made to go from the first division up to the top division, and then you became one of the best teams in the top division. Just how nice was to just see that you can do that with Þróttur.
It was brilliant. I mean, obviously, I didn't really follow women's football outside. When I was coaching Fjallabith, I only concentrated on us at that point in those leagues. Obviously, we came against Þróttur up in 2014. Mm-hmm. I think they came east and they beat us. So I didn't really know too much about women's football. It wasn't until I kind of got in at Þróttur and people were mentioning, yeah, it's a club that's never done anything. They can't do anything. They don't really care about women's football at that time. But for me, it was a challenge. I mean, when I sat down and they offered me the job, I said, you know, I think I can, you know, maybe it was a bit overreaching at the time. I didn't maybe think, but I was confident in the abilities that I had as a coach and the players that were there, that we could do something, especially with the youngsters coming through. And so I always felt like we could get to the top league in a few years and then stay up there, which we did. Mm-hmm. And so it was great to see the growth of the women's football program at Þróttur, definitely.
You could see also the culture within the club changed a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Obviously, it wasn't really until we were always there, you know, as, you know, getting a little bit more equal. It wasn't until 2019 when we won the Incasso, and I think the men, I'm not sure if they got relegated that year. But the men had been on a little bit of a slide. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden then the women's team were kind of the forefront, and then obviously we were in the top league, which, you know, Þróttur want to have, you know, teams in the top league. Mm-hmm. And then just staying up was obviously one of the big, at that time, the biggest achievement in the women's side in the history. And then to do it again, and then for the second year in 21, obviously we finished third and got to the cup final, and then fourth after that, and then third, you know, so it was great to see almost like a little explosion once we kind of survived that first year. Mm-hmm. The players had the belief, the ones at the club. But we went through some tough times with that. I mean, I think going into the 2020 season, maybe 2020 season, we were training inside Egersund. Mm-hmm. And we were training before KR. So they had signed Katrin Elsbjorn, Thordi Strun, Laura, all these players. we were training with, you know, it was me, because Edda wasn't at that point. So then you had six other girls. This was like in December. So I think, you know, when people talk about reboot and squad, you know, we had survived the first year. So going into 2021, we were training with, you know, six players through December. And then, no, so going into 2020, and then KR would come after us with 24. So yes, I mean, got to give credit to the, you know, the core of the group of girls. So I think you had then, I think it was Linda, Fricka, Alva, Drea, Sole, Yelena, and Betta, Elizabeth Freya. I think they were the main six. Obviously you had, you know, some of the older ones would come in once in a while, but they were the ones that were there on a regular basis. You know, for, you know, when we say we would have six, sometimes we had four, and then say KR would come off of 24, 25 players. And this is, so this was December. So we went through some tough times in terms of rebuilding, but they, you know, the players we saw, say, so once we kind of realized that they had the belief and we survived, and things have just got moved on, and the players have just grown fantastically.
You must have learned a lot at your time with Rotherham, and during that time your system kind of got born, the diamond midfield.
Yeah, that was, so 2018 we started to play it, because we lost some, we didn't have any natural wingers at the club. So I think it was a conversation more with Jamie Brasington, I think, because he had just come in at the club, because we were discussing what to do, and the idea of the diamond came up. I'd never coached it before, I'd never played it before, so we just, you know, started to toy around with it, you know, in the pre-season of 2018, and kind of started to, you know, introduce it a little bit here and there. And then 2019 it really kicked on, because you had Linda and Lauren Wade up front, with Margaret Svens as well, where they all scored over 20 goals, which was really ridiculous. But yeah, so then it really kicked on. And then, you know, trying to take that to the best of Dilt, or had its moments. We knew we didn't want to go away from it because it was suited us, but we had to change some games to be just a little bit more defensive. You know, I'm still learning as a coach, still was learning as a coach. Maybe I could have just played the diamond in every game. I don't know. But it works. And, you know, it's something that we, you know, just look to continue to do now. It's, you know, it's what you staple as your formation.
You're known for it now. Diamond system.
We'll see if we look to try and change it. You've always got to adapt. You've always got to add, because teams definitely know, you know, what I do and what we want, what I'm trying to get my teams to do. So that's the challenge, just to always just tweak it a little bit to suit the opposition that we're playing.
Why is the best system for you to play?
Say that again. Why?
Why is it? Yeah. Why did you pick? Like, you picked it because you didn't have any wingers. But yeah. Why have you decided to continue with it?
Just more comfortability, I think. Just, I'm so used to playing it, and I know what we can do and what the areas that we can overload. And then the pressing as well. I mean, I still would like to maybe adapt myself to coaching and develop a little bit more to maybe have a fluid system during in possession and out of possession.
Yeah.
But it's just something that I'm just really comfortable with. And yeah, I mean, you know, that the players we had, you know, obviously at Throttle we were recruiting players to fit the diamond. At Breidablikk you already had, you know, Beata, you know, more, you know, she was not so much as a main striker, more, you know, a bit of a winger. Agla Maria obviously was the biggest challenge that people gave to me. It's just like, how are you going to change her from being a winger to playing the side of the diamond? And again, it's just a conversation, show the examples, and then we started to see it a little bit. So that's what it is. But, you know, there's fluidity within the diamond. But yeah, so that's just because I think it just suits my style of what I want to try and do.
At Throttle, you had one of the best players in Iceland, and Katie Cousins. She played for Valur this season. Was it difficult to see her play for Valur and not for you?
No, because I never tried to get in at Breidablikk. The conversation that we had at the end of last season was that she was looking to try and take the step and maybe go to Sweden or something like that. And it never came about. But for me, again, you know, I love Katie and she's a fantastic player, but I don't think she had the capabilities to play as a six in the diamond role. And that's all that we're looking for in terms of midfielders, because we were moving, we had Agla Maria, had Dreyer. Mm-hmm. Caritas was coming back from injury, and you had Alsa mm-hmm. as well, that's going to play a little bit. You had Margaret Leigh, you still had Michaela, that was going to change into midfielder. So I would have just been bringing Katie in just to bring Katie in, mm-hmm. Which I didn't want to do because there were still players there. I only wanted to recruit players to play the pick that we needed in positions that we needed, rather than just going for people that were available.
Mm-hmm. Have you like started to think about next season though?
A little bit. We had all player meetings yesterday. Obviously, we've got players out of contract. You know, we want everybody to stay. So then it's a case of conversations between the club and the players to get that done. Mm-hmm. Then obviously, then depends on how they go. Will then depend how we approach the winter. If we can get everybody done, then obviously it's just looking at who we want to replace with Alster. Mm-hmm. But other than that, and maybe Sammy. It's depending on how that goes, but other than that, it's we don't need anybody. We've still got the girls from Harvard to come back. Munda will be graduating, so she'll be available pretty much the second half of the season, where the way the women's Euros is going to work. So you still got those girls. You still got some of the youngsters to get more opportunities. Leaf, who was on loan at Ugnablik, was more in the squad. I would like to give her more opportunities last year. Edit, Vigdis's sister, can score goals as well. So, I mean, we've still got youngsters to come through. Olga was on loan at Haukau. So we've got a very good basis for nucleus there. So, providing we get everybody re-signed, it's probably going to be one of the easiest winters ever in terms of recruiting. We won't have to do anything, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Just for yourself personally, you're going into your second season with Breiðablik now, and the ambition is probably going to be high after the season you had. Just where are you looking for if you look into the future, what's your like ambition with Breiðablik? Do you see yourself like staying long in Iceland for many more years?
I wouldn't say many years. Mm. Obviously, the main thing for me is I need to get my citizenship, because it opens doors in Europe in terms of being able to travel. Because the wonderful thing without Brexit, you're starting to see it's having its effects with people trying to move abroad and work. So that's what that's why I want to stay. I've got to get that done. So that will also play a part. But yeah, I mean, I would love to, bring the 20th title to Breiðablik and win things for the next few years. I would love to see if we can break into the Champions League group stage as well, which will be a challenge next year. You need luck, definitely need luck with the draw.
Yeah, especially after this year, where the draw for both Breiðablik and Valur was incredibly difficult.
Yeah, the league pathway is always going to be difficult. I mean, because even if we had got past Sporting, we would have played Real Madrid. So there, you look at that next stage of the league pathway. You're playing. I can't remember all the teams, but you're playing all the biggest teams in Europe. Yeah. Obviously, the structure's changing next year. I say Valur were just unfortunate. Even if we went down, one another's path, I don't think anything changes. I don't think they beat Sporting. I don't think we beat Twente. Mm-hmm. But then you look at one of the teams that made it for the first time, Celtic. Mm-hmm. Or relatively decent pathway that they had. Olšić, the Croatian team that Breiðablik beat in 2021 to get to the group stage, they're back in it again. So you need luck. Mm-hmm. You definitely need luck with the draw. So we'll see how that goes. But that's the goal. I want to keep winning things. It's not a case of we've done one and done, and the players are hungry to do more as well. So that's the goal, is just make sure that we can just keep winning. Keep developing players as well, because we've got some great youngsters. And so, as Breiðablik is traditionally known to move players on to professional clubs. Mm-hmm. So that would be a nice thing to see as well for some youngsters to be on the platform where they can go abroad and go professionally as well.
Mm-hmm. You're going back home to England now for a vacation?
Yep, go back on Thursday, there for a week. Then I'm going to go to Mexico for 2 weeks. Mm. The first holiday that I would have had, a proper holiday that I've had in years. And then
you're going to see the sun after the summer we had here?
Yeah, that's that's also the first thing I haven't seen. Maybe 2022 when we went to Slovenia with Rotter, during the Women's Euros. That was the last warm sun that I've had.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. The weather here this summer was not nice.
No, and I think the way that it finished off towards the end, how nice it was, mm-hmm. I think put a nice touch in the season. But yeah, obviously you could go back to our game against in Valo in June.
Yeah, it was a yellow weather warning.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously starting to move their game inside.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was not fun. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think it's always good refreshing for people to get away and get some sun and just reset and go from there.
And then you're excited to come back this winter for the pre-season?
Yeah, will we? I mean, at the moment, it's just still kind of get things done. I think once I get home on Thursday, Friday, it will hit me, and then I can just relax a little bit. And then, you know, the idea is then you have a little bit of break, and then you get the itch, which will come, and then be excited to get back and
come back for more.
Exactly. You know, it'd be nice, you know, to have a different structure of things. You know, I've been, you know, with the way the winter works, it'd be interesting to see if we can organise things, not just from Breiðablik, but from point of view in terms of the competitions as well, like with the Lengjubikarinn, like the way it worked out, it's like we played Valur six times this year, which is fine. I mean, if two teams always get to the final, but we were in the same group of the Lengjubikarinn, mm-hmm. played in the final, and it'd be nice if there's a little bit of a change, you know, not just for the you know, Breiðablik or whatever, but for everybody, like with the Lengjubikarinn. I don't know why we couldn't have four groups of five, mm-hmm. Just split up the best of Dild and the Lengur Dild, you know, because it'd be nice to have a nice little bit of variety of games, you know, try some things in a competitive environment rather than just trying to arrange friendlies. I think it suits, you know, I think some of the Lengur Dild teams would like it as well, mm-hmm. you know, to get tested, test themselves a little bit. You can still do playoffs for like a you know, a B if they still want to do that or however, but you know, you take the last couple of years, especially with like Selfoss and KR, you know, when they go through a big change of players, and they're in the, you can see, and they're playing in the A of the Lengjubikarinn, mm-hmm. you know, when Perry took over at KR, you know, he was getting beat 7-8-9. Björsi at Selfoss wasn't as heavy, but they were just defending. It's like, how can those teams properly prepare for the season ahead when they're not even playing anything like they're going to be playing in the season? I definitely put that down to, you know, potentially being in the positions that they were down to because they couldn't do anything in the winter. They've got to play these games. Mm-hmm. And so then the morale of those players isn't great. Mm-hmm. So it'd be nice if we can just change things up and have a little bit of a freshness to the competition. It doesn't have to be every year. We could just try it for 1 year, see how it goes and change it back. I mean, it's, you know, it's the Lengjubikarinn, it's a pre-season tournament. Mm-hmm. That should be used to try things and see how things go, mm-hmm. really. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, be exciting to get back for the winter.
Mm-hmm. Do you think for Breiðablik that there are many players maybe in the squad that are maybe looking to go overseas and play in their next season? Maybe you have like players like Aklamaria, who's tried to done it before. Do you think maybe she's going to try to do it again?
No. No, she's not with her. I think you've got, you know, some of the youngsters, you know, Elsa, you know, she's quite open about wanting to go professional. Mm-hmm. I think Vigdís Lilja would like to go as well at some point. And think, you know, you some of the other youngsters, maybe even Drea, mm-hmm. you know, conversations you had. She's proven herself this year that she can be, you know, one of the best creative midfielders, well, and sort of scorers in the country. So she's had a really, really proper breakout year. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's always been good, but she's had a really breakout year. Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe, I said that maybe even Ellen as well. You know, so there's always possibilities. I don't think anything's going to happen immediately, mm-hmm. But I would like to think that, you know, they have something in the back of their mind where they would at least, if it was the right move for them, mm-hmm. to go, because again, it's great. I mean, and I don't think we'll ever become professional here in Iceland. Mm-hmm. So it'd be nice if, you know, for these players to go and experience a professional. And what you mean by that is playing, you know, training in the mornings, like here in Minsk when we play them in the Champions League, they're fully professional. So they train in the mornings, they get food afterwards. So it'd be nice for the experience. It'd be nice if one team maybe took a chance 1 year. Obviously the, you know, players as well would have to kind of come to a compromise in terms of work or things like this, but there's a difference when it's your only job, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, when you're just thinking about football, not football and a part-time job. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it would ever happen here. A club would have to really take a proper, you know, financial planning ahead of time. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, we're going to implement this in 26 or whenever it may be. Maybe have finances in place for a year or two to see how it goes. But it would be interesting to see what could be done, especially at a club like Breiðablik, if we're competing for things and in the Champions League, when, you know, you've got players, you know, when that's the only thing to think about, they're not coming to trainings and games, especially at the start of the season, when they've got exams going on. And I think, you know, sometimes not players get enough credit for that, both on the men's and the women's side. I think a little bit more so on the women's, you know, where they've got hard exams, they're studying all the time, and then we're starting the season and they're expected to perform at the highest level. You know, it takes a burden on their bodies and mentally and physically. So yeah, so it'd be interesting if that ever happens, but we'll see.
Just Agla Maria, she's, it must be great for a player like her to be settled at Breiðablik. I mean, she's really too good for this league, isn't she?
I mean, you could say that about a few players, really. to be honest, that are too good for the league. I mean
she's an unbelievable player for the top league in Iceland.
Yeah, she is. She's been an unbelievable player here, but, you know, I think she's just enjoying the football, and that's the main thing for her. She's got a job, you know, when I spoke to her, she's got a job that she really enjoys, and, you know, she's put football first a lot for, you know, period of time. I mean, she's still quite young, but in that young period of time, she's always put football before everything else. And which is, you know, I think part of the reason why she's just enjoying life a little bit more. You know, maybe, you know, in a year or two, she might have a change of mindset, but she's happy. As you know, as far as I know, I don't want to speak for her, but when we had the conversation, she's happy playing for Breiðablik and winning things and just enjoying, you know, her job as well. So, you know, if the player's that way, regardless of how good they are, you know, I don't think anything should be forced and say, oh, they should go abroad. If they're happy here, they're happy here.
Just finally, it's been what, 17 years now since you first came to Iceland. Did you expect when you first came here that you would be sitting here now, 2024, as an Icelandic champion and talking about that?
No, quite honestly, no. It was just, at that time, as I say, I was just playing out of university. So, you know, just coaching a job. And I think it was only the last, I think, you know, 2021 was when we did so well with Rotterdam, finishing third, pushing, you know, again, exceeding all targets. I think we were predicted to finish relegated that year as well. But then getting to the cup final, that first cup final, even though we lost, it was a hell of experience. So I hadn't experienced anything like that before as a player in terms of being a national title game. So from then it was just like, okay, so this is what it's like, and been hungry for success ever since. And yeah, I mean, to be a national title winner is a great feeling, and hopefully we can start to do a little bit more.
Life in Iceland, is it, do you enjoy it? Good?
Yeah, I mean, I've been here for 8.5 years permanently, but as you say, 17, it's always been a good home. I enjoy what goes on here.
Like a nice second home.
Yeah, it's like a nice second home. Yeah. I don't think, if I wasn't coaching, I don't think I would be here anymore.
Not in the winter, especially.
Not in the winter, not especially. I mean, it's just, I've always been a bit of a nomad to some extent.
Yeah.
But, you know, the coaching side of things will definitely play a part when we move on. And if, hopefully it's a when. But yeah, Iceland's been fantastic to me.
Great place to learn.
Yeah, that's the thing as well. I mean, I've always had the fortunate experience being here in Iceland, where, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do this in England or in America. Being able to coach full time, I think I only had a UEFA C at the time, a Cal CC, when I started the Throtter. Obviously things are changing a little bit now, so the opportunities to being able to develop and coach here has been great. You know, again, you know, Throtter, I wasn't ever given the remit of saying you have to win, you have to do this. It was basically just kind of create something from what we wanted to do as a staff and a group of players. So I think that's helped, where I've just kind of was able to make mistakes, and, you know, the job was never in danger. So yes, and, you know, that's certainly helped me move on and get a better temperament for one, and understanding players a little bit more as well. And, you know, working alongside great people like Raquel and Egilatla and Eden now as well, who's been awesome, you know, from yeah, from day one, and continues to do so. We're a good working team together. Mm-hmm. Have our disagreements, of course, but we just move on.
What do you think you and Edda get along so well together?
It's difficult. I think we both understand the game of what we want to try and play in terms of football and what we see. Obviously we see different things as well, but with no nonsense, we don't take things to heart. You know, we both will win. So we have disagreements, but we don't, you know, it's not as though we go home and sulk about it and then don't speak to one another the next day. Mm-hmm. You know, it's nothing like that. We disagree and then 5 minutes later we're just laughing and joking about anything else. It's just, you know, just really good strong characters that just balance one another out. So I can trust her with what we want to do. You know, when we split sessions up and everything like this, we speak about ideas, about players. So yes, I mean, it's going to be, I mean, again, I don't anticipate holding on to Edda forever. Mm. There'll be eventually a time when the the bird will leave the nest. She'll hate that. But when she, you know, when she'll eventually move on and work within the national team setup in some form, manner as a full-time member. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, you know, we'll enjoy every moment that we have coaching with one another.
Mm-hmm. Just final question: are there any coaches out there that you like especially look up to?
It's a difficult one. I mean, like, people's like, when they say, oh, you know, like, so and so is my mentor, so and so, you know, mentored both in the professional game. I don't really look at it that way. Obviously I grew up supporting Man United, so, you know, Sir Alex was, you know, a born winner, but he wasn't exactly a great tactician. I think, you know, what Peter's done, you know, when he's come to Valor, I think that's like a little bit of an aspiration, is to try and compete with that, with Staney as well. That was a bit of a mix, and more case of achievements, what people have done, rather than the actual kind of people that I look up to. Maybe, you know, I guess you can say you look up to them in terms of what they've done with achievements. But I wouldn't say I'm a student of the game. It's not as though I go home and watch football 24/7. You know, I watch Icelandic women's football 24/7. But when I go home, I just, you know, I watch something else. So I think there's something that maybe added a little bit. But as I say, I just see the game how I like to try and play. It's not really necessarily focused off a little bit. To be honest, you know, I'm you know, being at Breidablik and seeing how Doherty works with the men's side, and watching their games, I do see kind of things that I like as well. So I mean, I try and pick off bits and pieces from everybody. But yeah, I wouldn't say there's anybody's particular look up to and just obsess over.
Yeah. So Nick, a really enjoyable chat. Congratulations on the league title again.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here, and yeah, we look forward to 2025.
Yeah, good luck next season. Thank you for the chat.